नमो सायुधस्तामहाभूजा साक्षाद्दाष्टात्समुत्पाच्या सद्यो देवी अम्बरां गच्छा अदृश्यतानुजा विष्णो सायुधस्ता महाभूजा प्लीज चांट साक्षादस्तात्समुत्पाच्या सद्यो देवी अम्बरां गच्छा अदृश्यतानुजा विष्णो सायुधस्ता महाभूजा साक्षादस्तात्समुत्पाच्या सद्यो देवी अम्बरां गच्छा अदृश्यतानुजा विष्णो सायुधस्ता महाभूजा साक्षादस्तात्समुत्पाच्या सद्यो देवी अम्बरां गच्छा अदृश्यतानुजा विष्णो सायुधस्ता महाभूजा. So we'll do the word for word. Sa, that female child. Tadhastat, from the hand of Kamsa. Samudpatya, slipped forward. Sadhya, immediately. Devi, the form of a demigoddess. Ambaram, into the sky. Gata, went. Adrishyata, was seen. Anuja, the younger sister. Vishnu, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sa Ayudhya, with weapons. Asta, eight. Mahabhuja, with mighty arms. So the translation for text 9. The child, Yogamaya Devi, the younger sister of Lord Vishnu, slipped upward from Kamsa's hands and appeared in the sky as Devi, the goddess Durga, with eight arms, completely equipped with weapons. Purport. Kamsa tried to dash the child downward against a piece of stone. But since she was Yogamaya, the younger sister of Lord Vishnu, she slipped upward and assumed the form of the goddess Durga. The word Anuja, meaning the younger sister, is significant. When Vishnu or Krishna took birth from Devaki, he must have simultaneously taken birth from Yasoda also. Otherwise, how could Yogamaya have been Anuja, the Lord's younger sister? Texts 10 and 11. Divya srag ambara lepa ratna parana pushita danu suleshu karma si sankha chakra gada dara sada charana gandharvair apsara kinaro gai upahritoru pali bihi srutayamade dam abravit. Text 12. I should read the translation for text 10-11. The goddess Durga was decorated with flower garlands, smeared with sandalwood pulp, and dressed with excellent garments and ornaments made of valuable jewels, holding in her hands a bow, a trident, arrows, a shield, a sword, a conch shell, a disc, and a club, and being praised by celestial beings like Apsaras, Kinnaras, Uragas, Siddhas, Charanas, and Gandharvas, who worshipped her with all kinds of presentations, she spoke as follows. Text 12. Kimaya Hataya Manda Jata Kalu Tavanta Krit Yatrakva Vapirva Satrur Mahim Sihi Kripanam Vrita. So the translation for text 12. O Kamsa, you fool, what will be the use of killing me? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has been your enemy from the very beginning and who will certainly kill you, has already taken his birth somewhere else. Therefore, do not unnecessarily kill other children. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopi Stam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Sha Shri Rupam Sagrijatam Sahaguna Ragunatam Vitam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishaka Vitams Cham. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavan Ishvari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Paramami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Taribhyascha Kripa Sindhubhye Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Rumpada Swami Iti Namine Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschitya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gauravakti Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In the previous verse to today's one that's on the board, there's a description of King Kamsa. He's throwing the child down with great force. And there's a word that's used for that, aportayet, which is translated as smashing. He was attempting to completely destroy the body of the child by dashing it against the surface of a stone. Now, in this verse, the same baby, being Yoga Maya, is described by Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur as responding in a particular way. As Yoga Maya was falling to the ground, she forcefully, so just with the same force that Kamsa is using to try and dash her against a stone, she forcefully leaps up into the air. it's like force against force. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he adds that the Vaivishya Purana says that Yoga Maya, Durga, put her foot on Kamsa's head as she went up into the sky. and at the moment when she's going up into the sky, she becomes fully visible in her natural form, where she has eight arms. And the description is given in the following verse to this one. She's decorated with beautiful garments, with flower garlands and ornaments. And in her eight arms, she's holding a bow, a lance, arrows, sword, conch shell, disc, club, and shield. So, weapons. And Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura, he specifically states that she held those weapons in her eight arms for a very specific reason. And the reason was to frighten Kamsa. So they're all weapons, meaning that, you know, she's ready to go into battle. And this comes from the Sarita Darshini commentary on this particular verse. And if we were looking at who is this personality, Yogamaya, she can be defined as being a potency of Krishna, meaning that aspect of Krishna that's influential or it's powerful. By that influence or that power in the form of Yogamaya, Krishna is sometimes, by her arrangement, because she's acting on the part of Krishna as his power or his influence, she sometimes allows Krishna to be visible or manifest, and sometimes not so. And this can be contrasted with Mahamaya. And Mahamaya is that influence of Krishna which covers actual reality, and it displays something unreal. So the distinction is interesting, and I'll try and explore it a little bit through going into these three verses. And this is a definition that's given by Srila Prabhupada in the 13th chapter of the 10th canto in the 57th verse. So he defines or makes that distinction between Yogamaya and Mahamaya. Now, Srila Prabhupada, he explains that Krishna's power is such that it works in a variety of ways. So, Yogamaya and Mahamaya, they're amongst the individual parts of the same one potency, the same one power, or the same one strength. So, Krishna has these different parts, or influential parts of himself. Now, these individual potencies or influential parts or powers work in their own varied ways. So there's an analogy that's made. One can have a machine, and the machine has parts that are working in a particular way. I don't know the ins and outs of machines, but let's say a simple lawnmower, it may have wheels, it may have some blades that rotate, it may have a handle that one can depress or not, depending if one wants the machine to move forward or halt. And each of these parts is working in a particular way. So, you know, the blade is rotating, or the wheels are turning and allowing for forward motion, or the depression lever at the top is permitting one to halt the machine or allow it to go forward. So, in the same way, so this is the analogy that's made, Krishna has the power of knowledge and the power for pleasure. So that simple lawnmower has the power to lop off the grass, the tops of grass at certain heights, depending on how the blade is positioned. Now, so that's the power of that lawnmower. It doesn't have any other power. It's a simple matter of lopping off the tops of grass stalks. Of course, it's more difficult if they've been allowed to flower. I had this experience. It has to still be not at the flowering stage, so it has limitations, even that machine. But in the case of Krishna, his particular power is of knowledge, and he has a power for pleasure. So very subtle powers. And each of those powers has a distinct influence. So we find that Krishna's yoga maya, so that particular power can take the form of goddess Durga with 8 arms, complete with weapons, and even being beautifully decorated with there's cooling sandalwood pulp on the body, there's valuable jewels, there's beautiful garments. And taking into account the definition given of Yogamaya, one can understand that her presence is indicating that Krishna is present. Just her presence indicates Krishna's presence, because that is her purpose. She's allowing Krishna to be visible or not. So the fact that she presents herself so dramatically and she's working as one of Krishna's influences, one understands, oh, Krishna's present. And indeed, the verse reiterates that, because there's a description. It says she's the younger sister of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so Srila Prabhupada is reasoning that in order for Yogamaya to be the younger sister of Lord Krishna, Lord Krishna has to be her older brother. So it means that they both needed to have taken birth from the same mother, which would be Yasoda. Now, this is interesting, of course, because here we understanding that Krishna's taken birth from Devaki. So this is the first time we're hearing this introduction. Oh, actually, here's his younger sister. It implies that actually they both took birth from the same mother. It means that Yasoda gave birth to both of them, both Yogamaya and Krishna. And so the implication is that simultaneously Krishna took birth from Devaki and from Yasoda. So that's what we're beginning to understand from this second verse that's just been introduced here. Now, if one considers Lord Krishna's prior agreement with Yogamaya, because much earlier on we heard they had a conversation with each other, and he told her, and these were Krishna's words speaking to Yogamaya, "Oh, all auspicious Yogamaya, I shall then appear with my full 6 opulences as the son of Devaki, and you will appear as the daughter of Mother Yasoda, the queen of Maharaj Nanda." So this was from the second canto in the 10th chapter. And I'm resourcing Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He presents things very simply, so it's very helpful. And I'm going to read the particular text where he's discussing this point of Krishna having this conversation with Yogamaya, having a prior agreement of how everything was going to take place. So I'm just going to read the verse. It's 10.2.9. Athatam amsa bhagena Devakya putratam shubhe prapasyami tvam yasodayam nanda pantyam bhavisyasi. And it's particularly Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur looks at this last word, bhavisyasi, which he says indicates that Krishna is telling Yogamaya specific things. So he paraphrases what Krishna is telling Yogamaya. Your Yogamaya will simply appear from Yasoda. So it'll just appear. So it's not mentioned that you'll become the daughter of Yasoda, which is very significant, because it gives us some more insight into how Yogamaya works. Though it is mentioned that Krishna will become the son of Devaki. That word that was used was putratam, so he will become the son of Devaki, but Yogamaya will merely appear from Yasoda. So this has an implication. It means that Yasoda is not going to have the affection for Yogamaya as though it's her daughter. And in turn, this implies that Yogamaya's presence in Vraja is not going to be noticed by anyone, because she's just going to be appearing. It won't be factually that even Yasoda is going to understand this is my daughter and having that kind of affection for her. So it's very significant. When Krishna made the arrangement, he presented it like that. You're just going to appear. He didn't imply, now you're going to be the daughter of Yasoda, but he said, I'm going to appear as the son of Devaki. So interesting distinction there. But Yogamaya is still playing a very important role in the appearance of Lord Krishna in the womb of Devaki. And there's also, of course, a part played by Baladev, and there's a part played by Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma had initiated everything, because on the bank of the Milky Ocean, he made a request for Lord Krishna to appear. And then here we're having the part played by Yogamaya, where there's an overlap with the part played by Lord Baladev, who's the first expansion of the Supreme Lord. In this pre-arrangement with Yogamaya, there was also this following inclusion. Within the womb of Devaki is my partial plenary expansion known as Sankarshan or Shesha. So Krishna's telling her in advance, this is how it's going to happen. Without difficulty, transfer him into the womb of Rohini. So see how Krishna's influence through the form of Yogamaya extends itself. He's making all these arrangements way in advance. He's telling Yogamaya what she has to do. So she, in fact, is going to have the task to transfer Balaram, who would be that seventh child, into the womb of Rohini. So this is another wife of Vasudev, who's residing in Nandagram. So see the complexity. It's so intricate that, you know, for a demoniac person like Kamsa, it's just way too intricate, way too intricate. I mean, one has to truly be in the mode of goodness to see everything clearly. Now, Srila Prabhupada, he's explaining that what in effect Lord Krishna was saying to Yogamaya is, this is Srila Prabhupada's paraphrasing. It's very nice when the acharyas paraphrase, because they put it very simply, just like often the Bhagavatam speaker is saying things in their own words and it's much more simply put. So here's Srila Prabhupada putting it. Because I'm going into the womb of Devaki, the Shesha incarnation has already gone there and made suitable arrangements so that I may live there. Now he should enter the womb of Rohini, his eternal mother. Srila Prabhupada paraphrasing how Lord Krishna is addressing Yogamaya, what she needs to do. Very simple. But I mean, when one thinks about it, how intricate must it be to actually, withdraw an embryo from the womb of one mother and place the embryo into the womb of another? It's very, very intricate. One can't even understand that, subtle science. I mean, I've recently been speaking to a young woman that's visiting the temple, and she is in the early stages of having conceived a child, and the anxiety over protecting the embryo. I mean, there's so much anxiety because there's side effects that coming with conceiving, I don't know, bowel being thrown up and needing for rest and pins and needles in the legs and exhaustion. But at the same time, there's great concern over protection of the embryo. And in that particular person's case, there was all this dramatic event that happened, in the, 2.5 to 3rd month. The husband who works, how these many of these Indian companies work in the computer field, the person works for X number of time in one place and then is transferred to another place. It may be in the same country, it may be suddenly back in India, you know, it's unknown. So there they were all settled after, 4 or 5 years. Now was the time to conceive. It was done. And then 2.5 months into it, the company announced, no, you have to leave for India. And because the poor woman, in this great anxiety over protecting the embryo, and it's a very delicate kind of body, she was told by the doctors, can't travel. So then there was this headache of, how are you going to preserve the embryo? Still have a job, but not somehow go to India, have the job be somewhere else, somewhere where the travel is not so great. So this poor couple went through such anxiety just to think how they can protect the embryo, not have to travel, make a long trip where the embryo would be lost. So reading this of, transferring an embryo from one womb to another is completely bewildering and impossible to understand. So now, Yogamaya is being praised by celestial beings like the Apsaras. We read here the Kinnaras, the Uragas, the Siddhas, the Charanas, the Gandharvas. And they're worshipping her with all kinds of presentations. Anyway, I'm sort of aware of this thing of, worship of a great personality because I have a brother who lives under a monarchy in England, and because of a recent marriage in the royal family, you see this young couple going out and into the public and sometimes in another country, and you see people giving flowers, like bunches of flowers to the royal couple, and then there's a secretary on hand who, collects the flowers, or sometimes it's a framed print. You don't get to see what the framed print is, and the secretary is suddenly walking with bunches of flowers, some framed picture. So there's always this wanting to present something to great personalities. So this is what's happening with Yogamaya. She's receiving presentations from all these celestial beings. So the minute she's there in the sky, it's not that, she's alone with her weapons, looking ferociously at Kamsa. At the same time, all the celestial beings are immediately offering her something. So I don't know how she does with the presentations that are offered to her. There's no mention of a secretary behind who's collecting them, but I take it as just accepted. sorry, it's a slight diversion, but it just came to mind here. So Krishna gives the reason for her being worshipped. She is supreme in being able to fulfill the material desires of everyone. So like even a monarchy, the persons are looked at as persons that are going to be protecting and caring for the people of the country. In the case of Yogamaya, she's understood she will fulfill all the material desires of everybody. Like there's no gambling or, thought she may fall down or, that may not function well. It's understood that is her task and she'll do it perfectly. So this is also given by Krishna in the previous chapter, previous two chapters in the second chapter of the 10th canto. He says this. This is the defining characteristic of Yogamaya. Of course, we will note that she didn't fulfill the material desire of Kamsa. His desire may have been to bash her against a stone, but that wasn't going to be fulfilled. Rather, he got the appropriate response for such a demoniac desire. she appeared with all the weapons fully visible right in front of him and above him, you know, from an elevated position. So, and Lord Krishna, employing Yoga Maya in these various ways, he takes into account this worshipable aspect of her by having her go to Nanda Gokul. And Krishna's description of her, and I'm going to read his words because it's so wonderful hearing about Yoga Maya. So Krishna addresses her, "Oh, my potency." So there's that connection, it's made clear. "Oh, my potency, who are worshipable for the entire world and whose nature is to bestow good fortune to all living entities. Go to Vraja, where live many cowherd men and their wives, in that very beautiful land where many cows reside. Rohini, the wife of Vasudeva, is living at the home of Nanda Maharaj. Other wives of Vasudeva are living there incognito because of fear of Kamsa. Please go there." So this is what Krishna asks her to do. So her role was to encourage the devotees with fearlessness, because they were living in fear. And so, because she would create such an atmosphere of fearlessness, the whole land would become so much more beautiful and safe. So Yoga Maya has that ability to create such an atmosphere. And she was ordered by Lord Krishna to go there. So you can see the contrast, how she actually has these very intricate, delicate services that just affect everyone in such an extremely positive way, but how she's manifesting to Kamsa, the demoniac person. So it's very interesting. So in this situation, she is specifically wanting to make Kamsa afraid by carrying her weapons. So contrast, the whole of the land of Nanda Gokul is going to be experiencing safety because of her presence. That will be Krishna extending his influence through her. For Kamsa, she is determined to make him completely fearful. And indeed, later Yoga Maya also, she's playing a very important role in Vraja. And this is also very charming, the role she plays. The babies that are being cared for by their respective mothers, Yoga Maya is making the arrangement, and remembering how she's defined as making Krishna visible, she's making that arrangement where she influences the mothers to think, "Oh, here is my son." And she influences the babies, meaning like Baladeva and Krishna, "Here is my mother." So that's the role she's playing. So she's allowing for a reciprocal, transcendental, loving relationship to happen. I mean, it would be difficult if the awareness was of a different role. So she's influencing that kind of thought process. And so because the mothers are thinking that way, because of the influence of Yoga Maya, then happiness is causing the breast milk to flow. And because they're feeling affection. So you find that even with cows, you'll see that when they see their babies, the milk starts flowing. So affection creates the milk flow. So, you know, one can sort of think, you know, why are there so many milk banks where mothers can't actually give their babies milk? I guess there's lack of affection by implication, maybe. Just thinking. So now, when the babies see that their mothers are allowing them to drink the milk, which of course they do with the milk flowing, they offer their breasts, their babies, and the babies drink the milk. So when the babies recognize, oh, their mothers are allowing them to drink the milk, then they also, the babies, start feeling transcendental happiness. Because, you know, there's permission of some sort. It's like sharing something, giving something. So the babies experience transcendental happiness. And then there's a further part that Yoga Maya is influencing. So when the baby's little teeth start popping up or coming in, the mother start counting them. Oh, look, there's so many new teeth. So they're also experiencing greater happiness. So this is all the influence of Yoga Maya. In these transcendental relationships, it's her influence that's making them only see these babies as their children, and Baladev and Krishna are seeing their mothers as, oh, my mother, and that's all, nothing else. So it's Yoga Maya's transcendental arrangement that through this thinking that she's influencing, it's allowing for this ongoing transcendental affection. And so between Rohini and Balaram, and between Yasoda and Krishna. So this is quite an extraordinary way in which Krishna influences things through Yoga Maya. And he himself is playing the role that's allowing Yoga Maya to do her work, so meaning being the sun. So it's very interesting. And later on, Yoga Maya also comes to play a role as Krishna's growing up, and particularly in his interaction with his friends. We hear of one interesting pastime where it's Yoga Maya's arrangement that she allows for Agasura to appear. So this is interesting. Why is she allowing a demon to appear? And there's a very simple reason. Because her whole role is to allow for, you know, transcendental pleasure in Nandagokul, the boys, Krishna and the cowherd boys, they're so engrossed in their play that they actually wouldn't be stopping for lunch, because it's so exciting, the play. So by her making an arrangement that a demon pops up at lunchtime, then, oh, this, you know, allows for something else to be taken care of, and then, you know, the demon is demolished, and then, oh yes, we have to eat now, we're really hungry. So Yoga Maya is allowing for this variation in their day's activities. By stopping their continuous play so they can take lunch and also carry on the activities after lunch. So, she's got very interesting roles she takes. Now, where Mahamaya plays a role, so going back to the earlier definition, you know, Mahamaya is making something that's unreal appear real. So it's said that when Vasudev takes Krishna out of the palace, that is when Mahamaya is being taken by Vasudev. So it's the guards are lulled into thinking all is well and they sleep, etc., etc. Vasudev is taking Mahamaya in that case. That's how it's described. To cheat Kamsa. So the material thing, he's doing something that's against Kamsa, then it's said that he's taking Mahamaya to cheat him. So so Mahamaya is hiding the actual reality. So Kamsa has no clue that he's actually been cheated by Vasudev. I mean, Vasudev had actually made the vow to him, I'm going to bring every one of my children to you here. And this, when it's Krishna's turn, he actually takes him right out of Mathura to Nandagokul. So he's cheated. And so it's said that Vasudev is taking Mahamaya in order to cheat Kamsa. So and then as it progresses, we'll come to see that Yoga Maya is going to be worshipped in various forms. She'll be worshipped in various forms in Vindachala and other places. And in this moment, where Yogamaya is in the form of Durga, she's revealing the truth to Kamsa. So that's what Yogamaya does. She is allowing for Krishna to be visible or not. So by her presence, she's revealing the truth to Kamsa. Krishna is present. He's taken birth already. She even tells him directly, in case he didn't know the connection between Yogamaya and Krishna. She tells him directly, he's already taken birth. And Krishna is certainly going to kill you. So she tells him directly. And she reasons very logically with Kamsa. She says to him, Kamsa, what can you gain from killing me? If you kill me, you still cannot prevent your own death. He who will kill you has already taken birth somewhere else, which cannot be revealed to you. So she's sensible. And she states it clearly to him. You know, that personality that's going to kill you has already taken birth, but that can't be revealed to you where that somewhere else is. Very direct. And Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he actually says that there's a word when Yogamaya is revealing this truth to Kamsa. And in this last verse of today, verse 12, there's a word that's used, kripanam, and it refers to many poor babies. So she knows what's going to happen, and she says to him, you should not kill poor, innocent children unnecessarily. So she's trying to frighten him with all her weapons, and she delivers the important piece of information because she knows what's up ahead. You should not kill poor, innocent babies unnecessarily. And well, we'll come to hear what Kamsa does. So this is where we got up to now. So if there's any thoughts or expansions on the discussion. Okay.
One second. So it's Yogamaya appearing, but she also appears in the form of Durga, so she can just present herself in that way, or the same personality manifests in different ways. So.
The distinction is made between Mahamaya and Yogamaya, so one's understanding that, I guess, the very interesting question you posed was basically, are there different personalities or the same personality? And it would indicate, just by this very dramatic appearance here and this instant transformation, that she can, if it's one personality, you can manifest in different ways, it would appear. because the prior arrangement was all addressed to Yogamaya. And so she made her appearance as Yogamaya. But at the moment when a demoniac entity was attempting to grip her and destroy her, then she presented the form that is necessary for a demoniac entity, the form that hides reality or makes something that's real appear unreal. So there she is, she presents herself in that ferocious form ready to, you know, instill fear in him. So it would appear the switch was made instantly. So it would appear one personality and according to what's required. She says, I guess it's extreme mutability according to what's required. And certainly in all circumstances, always acting under Krishna's instruction as his influence and his power. So intimately connected with Krishna in whichever way she's functioning. But where it touches on the material realm, she takes on a ferocious form. It's not that sweet form and that's increasing transcendental pleasure and bliss. Rather, it's the ferocious form that's instilling fear, because that's her purpose in the material realm. As one increasingly gets more fearful of enjoying the material realm, so one is actually making spiritual progress. So that she's helping in the material realm in the same way that she helps in the transcendental realm, but in a different way facilitates spiritual advancement. Because the increase in fear of enjoying the material world, one is making spiritual advancement. So she's still doing her role, but in a different form. So thank you. That was a very nice, intricate point you brought up. Thank you.
Thank you for the class. So my question is that Kamsa was very bewildered because he knew that he was going to die. And so whatever he did, there is like, he could justify himself by saying that anybody who is fearful of death becomes defensive, and he doesn't want to die. Nobody wants to die. And so he took it to the extreme, but then there is a certain he could justify himself if he would be like asked why he did everything, that because he was a king and he had to protect himself. So he did whatever, because if Yogmaya is like making him so fearful of death, then he had to defend himself. So
I take it that you're expressing an understanding for Kamsa's position, that due to the fear of death, his action may possibly have been justified, because as a king he would have defense in his mind, and so it would be natural to do what's necessary to prevent death. So, some of the previous classes have touched on what is morality, and there's, in Western philosophy, there's this term that do the ends justify the means? So if the end is self-preservation and the means being employed is the slaughter of a baby, six babies in a row, and now he was ready to destroy the eighth child, does that means justify the end of self-preservation? So that becomes the question. So, looking at it dispassionately, one can say, here is a powerful king. He's no doubt trained as a kshatriya, where there's the qualities of a kshatriya are generally heroism and least one of the qualities. So it immediately brings the quality of heroism into question. How heroic can a king be who is in a state of fear, ready to slaughter 6 babies, one after another, and the method used is to take the body and smash it against a stone. 6, one after the other. And here it is a girl, and the mother is appealing. And she is trained as a Kshatriya too, so she's using the art of diplomacy that is known to a Kshatriya, where she actually says to him, first points out the atrocities he's performed. You've actually killed 6 babies who were bright and beautiful. and so this child is a girl. Those are boys. This is a girl. Please give her to me in charity. Spare her life. So the mother has appealed. So a king is supposed to have the quality of heroism. A woman is part of Dharma is to protect a woman, protect a child. They should never be killed. In Kamsa's case, he's taking that 8th child and he is forcefully ready to smash the child against a stone after the mother has appealed, spare this child. I'll give her to you as a gift. So in the future, you know, she can be the wife of whatever child you have. And Kamsa's response is, he proceeds to smash her against the stone. So does the end of self-preservation justify that means going against religious codes? The answer is apparent. So hardly could one support such a position. And if one oneself is fearful of death, and therefore from that angle feel sympathy for somebody who's attempting to prevent their own death, one has to ask the question, what means are employed to justify self-preservation? That is a very important question on a simple moral plane. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.